American without the bandstand. Cool fellow, dance hall, stay mellow. All that gun talk, who would have thought you die yellow? Damn, another hero wanna be. Now he sleeps with his friends in the mortuary. Dude, I find it rude when you intrude. My pistol nozzle, it's your nasal dude who comes out your anal just because you're buff. Don't play tough, cause I'll reverse the earth and turn your flesh back to dust. Ooh, la, voila. It's the way that we rock when we're doing our thing. It's a natural law that the refugees bring. Ooh, la 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 la. Sweet thing. Shalom, Melon, go on a bit more.
Lie, but when we rush through, you must know raw cuts who got G's like the refuse, so F who ever wanna test, bring me stress, west coast back to east, grab my toes when I reach, truly curving, swerving, lifestyle is urban, sipping bourbon, surviving, we really keep the word when a boy wants be tested, set done, you get wet, I'm just a bit too unprepared to shoot it's fair, bet.
Fake bullets can't stop me, I can start the week out like safari, play you out like a sorry, sacrifice you Harvey Harvey, and I'm sorry, every single rapper, Dick and Harvey, saying they want to spar me, cause I think my repertoire and my memoir be reminding me of eating calamari in the Kalahari with a band of rock safari. So,
it's another episode of the Motherfucking Stew Show.
I spent 90 degrees on the leaf palm trees, sitting in the cool breeze in the West Indies. Flee the sea, ship my keys, a Santa Maria, the sangria with senior.
They keep telling me this, telling me that.
They smile in my face and they talk behind my back, but what they lack. It's the fact about my stats. My rap impact will kill you soft.
Hey,
like
yo, what's going on? I'ma get and come, you know what, we soon done. Gun by my side just in case I gotta run. A boy on the side of Babylon trying to front like you're down with Mount Zion. Yo, what's going on?
I'ma get and come, you know what, we soon done. Gun by my side just in case I gotta run. A boy on the side of Babylon trying to front like you're down with Mount Zion.
Said run.
The Martin. Tell him to build a coffin. Today is that season. 100 MCs, I get my diamonds. Top it! Call Mr. Martin. Tell him to build a coffin. Today is that season. 100 MCs, I get my diamonds. Ha ha ha.
What's up, everybody? It is another episode of The Stew Show. Give it up, give it up, give it up, give it up for your hometown crew. I am going to discuss farming regenerative demonstrations of that. And I'll be giving up my friend's screenplay movie. I'm going to have a guest on the show today. This is a demonization of males episode. Oh, right. So, is it a bad thing? Or is it a good thing? Or is it okay for a woman to put this ad on television if she's running against a man? I mean, let's be honest here, people.
When you're choosing Michigan's next attorney general, ask yourself this. Who can you trust most not to show you their penis in a professional setting? Is it the candidate who doesn't have a penis? I'd say so.
suddenly I'm
creepy and weird because she's running and she doesn't have a penis. She's a woman.
Super duper wrong ad. That was a real ad on television, dude. All right. So I'm going to bust out a little bit of this before I call my boy on the horn. You guys like Dave Letterman? You guys like Howard Stern? You like him or you hate him? You know what I mean? It's one or the other. But, yeah.
That was it. But I was really quite taken that I could sit in a room with Don Rickles.
Yeah, but
he would
see,
even know my
name. A little worried because now we're talking about Brad Gray.
Yeah.
I mean, I was with you with Jimmy Kimmel and with Don Rickles. These are working guys. These are blue-collar guys.
Right.
These are guys getting it done.
No.
And now we go up into the level of evil, controlling idiots.
Oh, whoa. He's an idiot?
Yeah.
Brad is?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't have that experience with him.
Now, aren't you the
What happened to you?
But
Brad Gray is an idiot.
It's that level of guy.
Why don't you say that about Jay Leno? I like your spirit. I like that you are on fire, but
where,
with the wrong people.
What happened to you? Weren't you always railing against the people you worked for?
I don't rail against everybody. You know what? Times change. NBC fired me. They humiliated me. In fact, you know, it's really weird. Now I'm on America's Got Talent on NBC. But back in the 1980s, a guy named Grant Tinker, remember him?
Yeah.
He was running NBC, and he said...
He was a great guy, by the way.
I hated him.
No, he was a great guy.
Oh, that's your buddy.
Grant Tinker was a great guy.
All I did was go on the air with Bestiality Dial a Date, and this guy fired me. And you know... What kind of great guy is that? What happened to you? You missed your sellout.
No.
No.
You're having drinks with Brad Gray.
And I will continue
Oh, for God's sake, you're Mr.
I made my
sellout.
Movie with Paramount Pictures. How dare you? But really, I have to tell you that I like the guy. And what did he do to you?
But no, it's not him. It's just show business weasels.
You and I are in business to stamp out
show business weasels.
Your boss, Les Moonves, is he a show business weasel?
Well, he
Oh, let's see this. I like Les.
If he wants to be, he can be a show business weasel.
Yeah. So you're saying that, then that way I got nothing to say. I'll be quiet. I mean, that's amazing.
Look, what did
Brad Gray do to you?
Nothing. I never met the guy.
And you hate him?
If I said to you I was having dinner with Brad Gray, what would you say?
I'd say I probably would expect that. You're a very successful guy. You met the guy and you enjoyed him and you went to see him.
Where is the real Howard?
Hold it a second.
Where is the real Howard?
You know what? You know why I resent you?
Wait,
I want to say why I don't like you. Can I tell you why?
You don't like me?
Now I don't like you. I'll tell you why.
For God's sake.
Everywhere I go, people say to me, you're friends with this guy.
Yeah.
No one wants me to have any friends. It is an amazing phenomenon. Everyone wants me to be the outcast.
I want you to be just like me.
I want you to have
the same friends I have.
Yeah, but you do have show business friends, and you are friends with powerful people.
I go and make
one powerful friend, Brad Gray.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting, I'm a sellout.
That's not a sellout.
Howard and Dave battling it out. Who's a bigger sellout? Any hizzles. Okay. One of the topics today we're going to get into is the demonization of males. And I am going to play you one more soundbite. I think you're going to like this one.
Breastfeed their newborn babies with the first ever chest feeding kit.
Jesus criminy, are you kidding me?
I would not.
Oh my God, have intercourse with your grandma. This is the worst thing I've ever heard.
Intercourse with your grandma, that's a good turn.
I'm just saying that. I'm trying to find a new way to swear. I'm tired of the way I'm swearing, so I'm trying to find new ways to swear. Okay, so... All right, people, we have to talk about something. Listen,
I haven't even told you.
I know. I can already tell it. Go ahead, tell me. I know, then I'll tell you what I... Go ahead, tell me.
A product design student at Central St. Martin's is in the process of developing a chest feeding kit.
Okay.
The idea behind the product is for dads to be able to help moms who are struggling to breastfeed their newborns. The kit contains a cocktail of hormones that the man would take while his partner is pregnant in order to grow milk ducts. Oh, I thought it was just going to be I thought it was going to be a prosthetic.
What the ever-loving...
I thought it was going to be a prosthetic that was going to hold her milk, which I thought it was weird that it would be on his chest. But actually, no, now because she has to carry the baby, you take these hormones so that you grow milk ducts. The main hormone is progestin, a form of the female sex hormone progesterone, which helps to stimulate.
And this is why I cannot say I'm a liberal or a Democrat. This is the bullshit that comes up with these far left people that I just go, I'm in the middle. I'm not you. That's the stupidest thing I've ever.
You'll grow up to a B cup and stop taking that.
Yeah, because that's what you can't wait for is me to grow tits. That's what you really want. Me and you could go shop at the Victoria's Secret.
You know what I really want?
Victoria's Secret together. We could go, oh my God, that baby, that looks awesome on you. So now.
Baby, that looks awesome on you. And your wife's talking to you. Oh, not going to fucking ever fucking happen. Not in this household. Henny hoozles. I got to just... Oh, man. Little insert. Man. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me right. Boy.
Stort.
Stort. Stort. Am I saying it right? Stort.
Yes. Stort it. Stort.
Stewart.
Mouth. Nose. 5 points. Back to Jennifer. Stewart. I've never heard of these words.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stewart. Hot.
Blank. Hot. Stewart.
Yes. You got it. I saw it in your head.
No, because I'm thinking hot. I'm thinking Rod Stewart.
Oh, shit. I don't think I like hearing my name that many times in a row. It's not a normal common name like Mike, Steve, John, Joe. I'm like, dude, did you have to say it 50 times? Son of a gun. Last one, and then I'm getting to the real show. We gotta play this. We gotta do it, people.
In Africa and Thailand, is, you know, people live hard lives, and manual labor is painful and repetitive and difficult. And anything that makes that a little bit more manageable is a very important tool for humans.
I always felt like people that did heroin or opiates or something like that were on a very short road to death. That was my perception when I was a kid. And then I had a friend who was a longshoreman. They worked on the docks, they would bring fish in and fillet the fish for the market. And he worked with a guy that every day at lunch, the guy would go cop, he would get his heroin, he would shoot it up in his car, and then he'd go back to work. And I was like, he'd go back to work? And you're like, yep, he worked every day. Like, every day he shot up and every day he worked. Like, yeah, he was never late. Nope, just did his work. Like,
right.
Wow. Well, I didn't think you could do that. I thought you did heroin. The next thing you know, you'd just be on the floor in a fetal position in your own urine, and you just would fall apart and die.
Right. Yeah, there's this idea that people sometimes refer to as pharmacological determinism, that a certain drug has to do a certain thing. So alcohol has to sedate and disinhibit you. Heroin has to addict you and make you a slave to it and kill you. Cocaine has to be a euphoric thing that's done at parties. It's also very addictive. PCP has to make you strip nude and run around
fighting cops
and punching holes and wooden fences. But when you look at this, you know, anthropologists have looked at certain drug
use people. Are they good or are they bad? Could you find a drug that's right for you to get yourself through this life, or is it just you're a fucking drug addict? Anyway, speaking of keeping the planet clean and trying to do the right thing for once in our goddamn lives, I got two more. Hold on.
It's all about keeping the grass short in a vegetative state, so it's growing vigorously. You know, through that whole process, you're actually degrading the soil and just topping it up with fertilizer inputs. And that system relies on bringing in particularly phosphate fertilizers, largely from North Africa. And a whole system that requires digging up that fertilizer and trucking it and then shipping it and then trucking it and then processing it and then flying it onto hills. It's a system that's not going to work in our future with less fossil fuels. Other farmers might be looking at this and saying, well, you're just wasting all that grass because it gets dry and stalky and what have you. But, you know, my reply is that waste is a human concept. Nature doesn't do waste. And so we're using that pasture as part of our fertilizer program because that's what's getting put down on the soil and broken down and going back into building soil. When the grass is grazed and under the holistic lawn grazing system, it gets cut off short by the animal.
So what they're saying is that you need to not fertilize, do it organically. And that's hard for people because it takes a little more effort, a little more work. It's actually cheaper because you don't have to buy fertilizer.
New Zealand with an idea for people to be able to use air points to donate to an environmental tree planting project. And we're just at the right place and the right time, very fortunate to get some funding from the Air New Zealand Environment Trust. And over a 3-year period, we planted 85,000 trees. The majority of those are New Zealand native trees, which are now flourishing and really transforming the landscape. And we've also planted, you know, a lot of nut trees and fruit trees where we can, just to create that abundance and vibrancy in the farm. And I guess, you know, one of the catch cries for the farm is diversity, diversity, diversity. And as much as possible, we're creating that diversity. We've got the cattle going around. We have, you know, hens following along behind the cattle. There's pigs on this farm too. And we're milking a few dairy cows. And all that is really about using a perennial crop like grass, pasture, with, you know, forage from trees and that around as well, without relying on so much of the annual grains and all the energy that's involved in producing them. One of the biggest changes that we've made has been reducing our sheep numbers and getting more cattle onto the farm. And that's because we're moving to a system of holistic grazing.
So holistic
grazing is a management technique that's been devised by a Zimbabwean man, Alan Savory, and he was observing the large herds of buffalo in Africa, and it could be bison in America, and just, you know, massive herds of ruminant animals. And these animals were constantly on the move because there's generally, you know, some lions or something just on their back and wanting to pick off any of the weak ones.
I'm going to end it. We'll get into that in a minute. Right, let me get right into this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We're gonna do this. I'm not gonna call him on that one. He's got a couple numbers, and I don't want to do that one. What do you say I go to this one here? I bet it will work better. $50 says that it works better. He's in Vermont. He's got a long way to telecommute. We're going to do this. Hey, hold on 1 second. Let me put you on speaker. Hello, David.
Hello, California. Hello, Stuart. How are you doing?
What's going on, Dave in Vermont?
Yeah, just waiting for you to call, buddy.
Nice, nice, nice. I did a little intro, and the last thing that we were talking about, just by me, is the farming regenerative.
Regenerative farming, yeah.
Yeah, regenerative farming, farming regenerative, same difference. Let's let's get into that first things first today.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I'll take it from a personal level and just, you know, make sure everybody understands that, I am a farmer and I am farming regeneratively in northern Vermont. I have a small flock of sheep. And last year, I actually did pasture-raised heritage breed turkey, though I'm not doing it this year. My thoughts on regenerative agriculture and farming in general is that it's fantastic, that it potentially can help us save our planet and capture CO2 from the atmosphere. So that's my motivation, and I could go into detail. Right now, though, just again on a personal note.
Yeah,
this is the time of year where winter is coming on fast. So, you know, we haven't seen 50-degree weather in weeks, and it's going to drop to 12 degrees on Sunday.
Woo.
And my animals are still out. We still have grass, and I'm maximizing their grazing time because once they go into the barn, it's basically a decline until they get back on grass again. So I'm feeding them hay. I'm giving them little treats every once in a while to boost their protein. So I'm in a panic right now trying to get everything together for winter. I've got a week before the animals go into the barn, and I've been setting everything up. I've got a lot of work left to do. So that's this coming week.
I have nothing against vegetarians, but, like, unless you're a vegetarian, who doesn't love a great steak, you know? And if you have the land and the time to go organic rather than to fertilize even, like, your grass
right.
for the cows to eat, and it's real similar to the Parker Ranch on the Big Island.
Right.
You let cows chow the grass until you move the whole herd to the next pasture, but you don't let them take it all the way down, but you let them get pretty low, and then the big herd will stomp the ground, and it regenerates and composts what there is left into the soil and aerates it and actually creates like a compost which gives it nutrients again. So
right,
the next
right.
time,
I'm
as long
impressed.
As... Well, the next time that there's sun, the grass will grow back even better. Like you told me a long time ago, most people don't do this, but when you cut your lawn, don't pick up the lawn grass because the grass will go back into the soil and turn into compost, right?
Sure, but what's even better than grass cuttings being used as a fertilizer, which actually is kind of questionable because it can, all those fibers can actually block the soil from sunlight and prevent growth of new grass. But what's even better than lawn clippings is manure. So instead of cutting the grass, the animal eats the grass. So what you've identified is called rotational grazing, and this is pretty much the way people do it now. They're still big,
not in not in Bakersfield.
Yeah, maybe not. There's some larger ranches that still, you know, but there is a moving of the cows that takes place because, you know, they will overgraze an area and do need to move on. Sometimes they'll move on themselves, but you know, one of the features of nature is that herds of grass-eating ruminants are pushed by predators. So, you know, the bison are followed by a pack of wolves. And the wolves, you know, picking off the weaker, younger ones, are keeping the herd moving. So they never overgraze one place for too long before they move again. get.
And so kind of like an indoor grow, you have to recreate the past by you're the coyote or the wolf or what have you. You have to tell them, move it.
Right.
But if you have enough of them, when they tromp over the ground, it smashes the roots in and this, that, and that, and then it recreates like a microcosm, you know?
So yeah, there's a lot to that. So check this out. Grasses actually have some of the longest, deepest root structures of any plant on this planet. And they're masochistic in that grasses need and like to be eaten, right? So when a grass head is, you know, nubbled down to, say, you know, an inch or two left, you know, from the ground, what happens is the root will do a die-off, and all that nutrition from the die-off of the root will push up and grow new grass. So that die-off of the root below, deep into the soil, becomes carbon, CO2, in fact, that the plant took from the atmosphere, and it locks it underground. You can use this process to trap CO2 in a natural system by rotational grazing, if that same head of grass gets nibbled again after it's been nibbled once, it can kill it altogether.
Well, that's why you kind of got a fence and herd them into a different section.
Exactly, with electric fence netting.
Wooden or electric or whatever. Just move them somewhere where they can't get back to that until it grows back.
Exactly.
But that's what I was saying. You know, you got to kind of, it's like a bonsai plant. You tell it what to do.
Right. But don't be confused. Just because people are practicing this on a wider scale today, it doesn't mean that the practices of conventional farming are nearly as ethical as they need to be, because they're not.
The thing is, like, especially if you have kids of your own,
right?
And you see the way the world's going right now, I'm like, we could turn it around and save this planet for our kids too. Like, show them the way that it's supposed to be done. You know what I mean?
Right. That's what I'm trying to do here.
Well, hold on. I'm gonna stir. Yeah. I'm gonna stir the stew pot.
Okay.
Guess what I made today?
Hmm.
I grew a bunch of squash. I still am growing them. They're just popping up. Pop, 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 pop. And then I just got a. It's not a pressure cooker, but it's like an instant pot. It's kind of like a crock pot.
Right.
But it's sealed, you know.
Right.
And you can cook vegetables and other things a lot faster, and they come out the same exact way as if.
It's a pressure cooker.
It's like a pressure cooker, yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
But you plug
steam
it in.
Steam comes out the top, and you can't open the lid right away. Or you'll get seriously burned. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a pressure. It's called an instant pot. It looks like a crock pot.
But it sounds like the perfect thing to cook tamales in.
Oh, there's so many things you can cook in it, but I just made this awesome squash, I'm going to call it stew, and it would be served at a 5-star gourmet restaurant as your first thing before you got your entree.
Right.
Or even your apps. Like, yeah, we'll give you some water and then we'll start you off with some soup. It's just so perfectly, it's so tasty. But enough about the garden and the food. The other topic today is the demonization of males.
Of male sexuality, in fact.
Okay.
The demonization of male sexuality.
That's right.
You know, I don't want... I have to say, before you say anything more, Stu, that this isn't about... this isn't about, you know, male rights or that men have been stepped on. That's not what this is about. Nor is it a revoking of of women's coming out against male sexual violence. That's not what this is about, because that is real, like, you know, that's not the demonization, that is the demon. So I grew up
without my father and my two sisters and my mom was an aircraft mechanic, and she was the only female that was an aircraft mechanic, and she didn't join the Navy. She was like a hired by the Navy.
Right, like a contractor.
Sure, and yeah. She worked on the jets, and she took a lot of shit, and she'd come home and tell me stories, and it's like, I'm not going to bring them up, you know?
Right.
But, yeah, I get it. So I'm like, why don't you start this, and then I have some stuff that I want to input in, too.
Okay, so what it appears to me is that whenever male sexuality goes public, right, and this is a cultural thing, I think this is part of the patriarchy, whenever male sexuality goes public, it's in a situation where it's being demonized, right? So okay. Traditionally, we can talk about homosexuality, for example. Male homosexuality is traditionally demonized,
yes.
Where we've made huge progresses, but it's still seen as a goofy thing,
almost a taboo.
Yeah, it's still in that realm, and we have progress to make. Don't think that, like, you know, now it's all over with. I think that, you know, gay people still face a lot of discrimination, but that's an expression of this. So if a person comes out as homosexual, their sexuality then is scrutinized by people who are normative, quote unquote normative, right? So. Another example of this is my favorite evangelical ministers who get caught, being with a prostitute or having a mistress or being gay themselves, being engaged in deviant sexual behavior, often, you know, drugs related to that. So
I've seen some weird things lately with the church, where, like, even, like, you know, it's mainly, like, in my mind, it's mainly like, yeah, they pick on little boys, yeah, but there's women in there also, and they're, I've seen them, like, unveil their penis and be like, serve God, da 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 da, you know, and like chicks that are like so trustworthy of this person, they think he's so right, you know, and it's
evil. Awful.
It's so freaking weird to me. I'm like, what a fucking weirdo.
Well, I think that's a perfect example, is that, you know, the church enforced celibacy on their priests because of the demonization of sexuality in general, and then in this particular case, male sexuality. So, you know, these people who are supposed to be the representatives of God on earth are seen as pure because they are celibate. Well, that runs against human nature altogether, so obviously, you know, something is happening behind the scenes in secrecy. Once it goes public, it's demonized. So, in this case, rightly so. But you know, the point being that it appears that male sexuality is supposed to be a secret. It's supposed to be something that takes place in private. It's supposed to be normative. And when it isn't, it should be a secret. And when you're caught, then you're made public, shamed, demonized. It's interesting, and I think it deserves some exploration, you know?
Well, hold on. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but be honest, how easy is it for a super beautiful girl to get through this life?
We're not going to talk about that again. Okay, so...
Well, I want to. Yeah.
Okay. So
let's just say you never get your hands dirty. Every
right.
time you go for a job or whatever, the doors just open. What does it make an average or unattractive woman or girl feel like? And not all men are Brad Pitt, but if you're rich, right, men do just fine. And
I think you're talking about a traditional model.
I mean, it's like I grew up in Coronado, and you'd see these gross old men with super hot chicks. And I'm like, the only reason you're with that guy is because he's rich. Like, you want the security. Like, you don't actually really like having even sex with that guy. And you're not doing it for a movie role, but you're married to him because he's got security.
Yeah, I think we've created a world for women where they're you know, objectified so much that that becomes a resource. And, you know, that's a reflection, again, of patriarchy. You know, I mean, you know, if a, you know, quote unquote, you know, culturally or a perceived beautiful woman can use her beauty as equity, and a less attractive woman seen, you know, from a normative viewpoint cannot do that. I mean, there's a problem there with our society for sure.
All right, so I'm gonna stew show you right now and just throw you a whip. You're gonna be like, what the fuck? All right, but just say I'm not married, right?
Okay.
I'm single.
Oh, we know you are.
No, I'm saying I'm single and I haven't had much play with the ladies in like a year or something like that. And I call you up and I go, Dave, I had sex with a homeless woman.
What?
Yeah. Like, what's the first thing that comes to your head?
I had sex. I don't know. Like, you in a tent?
I had sex with a homeless woman. Now, hold on. Hear me out. Ready?
Okay.
There's levels of being homeless, dude. Okay? There's the riding the rails, fucking huddled by a metal trash can with fire in it with, like, the fingerless gloves.
Right.
Then there's a super rich woman who's the owner of a mansion, but her house just burnt down in Santa Rosa, okay? Or they're living in a car, they're kind of a nomad, a backpacker traveler.
Right.
They're all three of them are homeless, but like the word homeless, I think everyone thinks of as like no shoes, dirty feet, grimy, probably haven't showered in weeks, dreadlocks. I mean, I don't know, but like...
Actually, you're making a huge philosophical point right now, and you're talking about linguistics and the representation of what these words mean to us.
Yeah.
And how we automatically come to a picture in our mind of what that word meant. But
I mean, what
fact,
if I had sex with a super-duper hot chick that owned a mansion, but it burned down in the fire a few months ago? I mean... We have a fire right now in Sacramento, and it's
right.
The wind is blowing so hard. We have so much smoke in Santa Rosa. I know for a fact that everyone that's house burned down and their houses are being rebuilt and everything right now, they're having a panic attack, dude. It's super duper smoky in my neighborhood. Like, you can't go outside. It's gross.
Right.
It's worse than the volcano. I mean, it's like, is the fire around the corner? And it's like,
huh.
But you know what I'm saying.
Dude, I mean, wait, is that the Butte County fire, or is that another fire altogether? Because, I mean, I know that up by where Tim Smith is living now,
uh-huh.
I think that's like the Trinity Elks. There's a huge fire going on up there now.
Okay.
Aren't we late in the season for fires, man? I mean, is it not raining yet?
It's just ridiculous that it's this... smoky in my neighborhood right now that like I'm like everyone here is like this. We already had this, like, a nightmare, dude.
Well, this comes back to how we farm the land and how we manage the natural world, you know, like these fires are out of control. I mean, we need to thin.
Speaking of out of control and on fire, I heard that you've been writing a screenplay lately.
I have been. Well, that's my winter activity. Obviously, I'm super busy right now, but once the animals are in the barn,
yeah,
I'll get back to the keyboard and continue on writing.
Well, would you like to talk about it?
Yeah, I can talk about it.
Let's hear a little bit, you know, without giving too much away.
Yeah. So it's about a 19th century businessman who faces several trials and tribulations in his life. For example, losing his young wife to yellow fever. Having his business partner abscond with all of his capital. He also went bankrupt a couple of times. And finally, you know, facing all of these hardships, he decides to take the Oregon Trail to California. And in doing so, becomes one of the first American pioneers of California, finds a new way into
the Oregon Trail is where, like, a lot of people had some serious weird diseases happen because, you know, everyone was... I mean, it's like you take a ship, you come to America, you finally get to the East Coast, and then they're like, yeah, let's saddle up and keep going. And not a lot of people were down for that. And then by the time that they hit the Oregon Trail, shit started hitting the fan. And if you made it past that, you were a fucking soldier, dude.
Well, I wonder if you're confusing the Trail of Tears with the Oregon Trail. But you're right. The Oregon Trail was burly. So this is the story of my great great grandfather. He kept a diary, which I've been using as a support mechanism for my writing.
Yeah.
And he definitely said at the end of the diary that he will never ever go on the overland route to California again. and I think he almost
did
die.
It's fucking brutal.
Hey.
It's brutal, dude.
It is brutal. I mean, you have to go over the Rockies. Yeah.
I mean, are you gonna be with your boys, or are you gonna bring a wife and a kid with you at the same time?
He didn't. He was a single man at the time.
Solo man.
His wife died.
He had his heart set on finding that gold.
Indeed, and he did with John Sutter. He found gold at Sutter's Mill right after.
Hold on, ready? Because you do it the best out of everyone I know.
Yeah.
Give me a yeehaw.
Oh, no, I knew you were going to say that.
Dude, you found gold. It's almost like Eureka, but give me a yeehaw.
Yeehaw!
That's fucking right, man. That's when you get there
and you find
that gold.
You're like, yee fucking haw. I don't even know if that would come out in the radio. We'll find out.
We will later.
Yeah, indeed. Anyway, so, you know, this is the story of an ancestor of mine. That's pretty compelling.
So hold on. He went across. He started.
So he went across.
Was he just mining in a river?
Was he doing it out of a pan?
How did he find so much gold?
Well, yeah, that's later. So he ends up working for John Sutter, and he was actually John Sutter's clerk for a number of years before getting a land grant of his own in Shasta County. So Pearson Barton Redding ended up maintaining a relationship with Sutter even after leaving his employment and moving north. When gold was discovered, Sutter was called to where the discovery was made, and he made a point to call his friend, Pearson Barton Redding, who came down and joined him, and together they confirmed, in fact, that there was gold in the river. And so immediately Pearson Barton Redding went back north to his own property and gathered up his Indian servants.
Here's your cut. Now go on, get it.
Yeah, and started looking for gold and found a spot, and in 5 weeks pulled out the modern equivalent of $5.5 million of gold.
Damn.
Yeah, he did very well for himself. And I think he continued on several other ventures in mining. And he had a store in Sacramento.
So he went solo across the country, but then after he got the gold and the money, and did he hook up with the Nectar?
He did. He actually ended up going back to Washington, D.C. after the California Revolution to secure his property, right? Because his property was given to him by the Mexican government. He wanted to assure that that property remained in his possession.
How did he get his way back to Washington, D.C.?
He took a boat. So in those days, what folks would do is take a boat to Central America and travel overland to the other side and then get on another boat.
Okay.
So that's how he got back. And he did several trips, in fact. He did several trips back to the East Coast.
We call him a full-on jigging it mariner stud.
Sorry, what? Jigging it mariner what?
He's a full-on jigging it mariner stud.
Yeah, pretty much. So he goes back to Washington, D.C., and ends up falling in love with a young woman who is, in fact, I believe she was the great niece of George Washington.
Damn.
And yeah. So I mean, he was a cool dude. Like, he was a mountain man, but he was a gentleman too. So he was able to come into society and represent and be able to pull it off. Everybody wanted him at their dinner table to hear the stories of the West Coast.
Sure.
And he had loads. I mean, it was a wild land back then. In fact, when he first came to San Francisco, it was called Yerba Buena, and there were only 150 people living there at the time, and it was the only settlement on the bay at that time. That was 1843.
Damn.
Yeah,
so like my favorite number.
On a little boat down the Delta, ended up at Yerba Buena, wrote about it in his diary, and it's crazy, man. I mean, so yeah, this deserves a place in the cinema.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and I'm gonna make it happen.
There's a chance that you could get this to Eastwood.
Well, I don't want to, that's a private conversation, but
okay, yeah.
There has been some indication that perhaps he may be interested.
Or Ron Howard, you never know.
A
lot of guys
Howard,
out there can make good movies.
That's not a bad idea, sure.
Or if you want to make it psycho, you call up Tarantino.
No, I don't think so, but there is some violence in the
get
film.
Some Rob, get some Rob Zombie and some Quentin Tarantino involved in it, and it might be badass.
Yeah, there's some crazy stories I've picked up in my research. Some pretty brutal stuff. He's a complex character. I mean, we're talking about a man from the 19th century. I mean, he's a gentleman, but what that means at the time, I mean, people had slaves, right? I mean, and that was justified morally. So this is the time that this story takes place. So he's not necessarily a good guy all the time.
You think he had slaves help him dig out the gold?
He did. Well, I mean, when he was given his land grant, the Indians or the native peoples living on the property that he was granted by the Mexican government became fundamentally his property in what was not too different from an apartheid-style state structure, where once you took seizure of the property, those Indians then could not leave the property. They were actually you became their ward. They became your children or your slaves.
It's weird. So, like, hear me out real quick.
Yeah.
Like, what was accepted back then as the norm? And then I live in the wine country, and I see people do it nowadays for people to pick their grapes and what have you.
Right.
When I lived on the Big Island, I was proposed by, like, the guys who run the island. We have these outskirts of islands with these, like, they call them, like, tiny men. Like, they're shorter than
Menahune.
I am.
Menahune.
They're just little tiny dudes, but like they work their asses off, and we'll set a farm up on your property, and you could hire these guys to work your farm for like no money at all. And I looked the dude in the eye and just went, I'm so sorry, man, but I just can't do that, you know? And he said, no problem, bro. You know, I just thought I'd throw that at you, you know? But, like, I could have got relatively pretty darn wealthy off of other people's cheap labor, and I was just like, nah, I can't.
Yeah, the world hasn't changed much, in fact. I think we give ourselves way too much credit for our advancement. I think we're still very much in that world. And,
well, on your farm, do you do all the work?
I pretty much do all the work. I sometimes need my sister.
Well, I'm saying, but you don't hire cheap labor?
No, I've never hired cheap labor. There is no cheap labor up here. The cheapest labor up here, and to even call it that is absolutely unfair to the people who do the work and to myself, because I pay them and it's not cheap, are the Amish. I've hired the Amish to do work for me on my farm.
How much an hour or what have you?
Well, they wanted $16 an hour.
That's it.
For five of them, to help me lift my barn. And,
Wait, not per person?
No, per person.
Oh, okay, but not even 20 bucks an hour.
They were very hard and fast. Like, it turned out to be like, you know, $2,500 I needed to pay the whole group of them. And it was so cheap that I thought that, you know, they should at least get, you know, a nice tip.
A little bonus action.
Exactly. So I think I ended up giving them $3,000 and they built my barn for me.
Damn, dude.
Really happy, and I was really happy. It was definitely not slave labor, yo. No.
All right, so hold on. Let's stir the stew. We're still going with my squash soup stew thing.
So you grew the squash?
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
And
in your backyard.
And the onions, the tomatoes, the herbs that go into it. The only thing...
No, it's so wonderful to have that relationship with the garden.
I put some butter in there, and I did not make the butter. I bought it, but it is like from a kick-ass Irish company, and you know it's the bomb.
Gary Gold?
That's one, dude. How'd you know?
Yeah.
All right.
I know my butter products, man.
Gary Gold is like, it's good. It's not the best, but it's super bomb compared to crap butter.
Right.
But,
no, it's
like
pretty
good.
Like
I said, I'm stirring the pot. Don't get me distracted, Dave.
Okay, go.
You've been a boss before.
Yeah.
Do drugs help people get through a dicky job, or should everyone, even like sheetrockers, be sober all the time?
I think it depends on the drug.
That's a good
answer. Right? Like, coffee tends to, like, you know, do good things for my crew.
Okay.
How's that?
Oh, it's just, it's like, I think people, like, they have a preception of what a drug does to someone.
Yeah.
And, like, I've never hired a heroin addict, right?
Right.
But if that dude worked his ass off all day, 8 hours a day, and did his job the way you wanted it done, but you knew... Fuck, at lunch, this dude bangs heroin every day. Would you be like, I gotta fire you?
Okay, well, if I was back in the city with my construction
company I'm saying any time, doesn't matter.
No, but I'm just putting myself in that because, you know, frankly, there's other concerns that are beyond just whether he does his job or not, right? Like, you know... statistically proven that people who are impaired by drugs do injure themselves with more frequency.
Right.
So with that in mind, I would be very concerned because safety is one of the most important things on any job site. I mean, construction is dangerous, as you well know. You've been injured, man.
I've been fucked up a few times. One time, I'm underneath a sidewalk, and then 2 feet underneath that in San Francisco, a sidewalk went a different way. So I dug down, and I went underneath that, and then I had that drill. I mean, what would you say the base of it was? Like 4 inches by 10 inches by 16 inches with a trigger on it, with a huge bit on it.
It was a big one.
And I was pushing it in and taking it out, pushing it in and taking it out, but I had to do so many holes, and I left it in there one time too long, and that thing swung around and hit me in the head to where blood was coming out, and I called you, and I'm like, Dave, you got to come pick me up. I'm going to leave my truck here, dude. I'm bleeding out right now.
And I remember you came and got me, dude.
You were a bro, dude. You're like, what? And I'm like, dude, I'm serious. Come get me. And you came and got me, dude. I got hit hard that day, dude. It was all, like, ah, fuck. Yeah. And I put my hand on my face and blood's coming down. I'm like, I got tagged.
Yeah, I actually look back at that and think you probably had a little concussion.
There was a few things just even on that job. Like, I've seen people get bonked on the head more than once.
Do you remember our solution for taking down the chimney by taking the bricks and throwing them down like 50 feet into a bucket of water? What if there was somebody walking around down there? You know what I mean? It's like, fuck.
Coming at ya! You're all four.
Yeah, I think we were pretty safe, but still, I mean,
yeah. Well, it's so good to hear your voice. Do you have anything you want to say to the crowd before I end this up?
Yeah, you know what? If you want to support regenerative agriculture, what I highly recommend is that you start scrutinizing very carefully where you're getting your meat from. Just because it says organic, just because it says grass-fed, that's not enough. You need to find a small farmer and build a relationship with that farmer and get your meat from there. And make sure they're practicing regenerative permaculture style agriculture. And if you want to check out my farm, I'm on Facebook. Look up Roving Tail Farm, R-O-V-I-N-G, new word, Tail, T-A-L-E, Farm, Roving Tail Farm. Thank you.
Yeah, baby, yeah. Like, everyone should do that. And it's weird for me, but, like, a lot of people don't have the balls or the want or what have you, but we do have a bunch of places in Santa Rosa where it's, like, local butchers, you know?
Right.
Like, Bud's Butcher is an epic place. There's another place here in Rosa. That one's more down in Rohnert Park. But even like at the community market where we play disc every Thursday, which I'm going to tonight, there's a section where the guy will not buy meat unless it is less than 25 miles from where he's at, right there at that community market.
Right. Right.
And it's pretty cool just knowing where you get the meat from, but having the farmer is even better, and we have that too here, which is pretty awesome. You gotta spend a few more bucks, but the meat is so much better.
Oh, it's worth the extra money.
Not even funny.
Not even funny.
But
yeah.
Well, I will check in with you soon, and
all right.
I love talking to you, my friend, and I will talk to you soon.
Okay, till next time. Bye.
All right, brother. There goes Dave Templeman in Vermont, living large on his farm. And I just wanted to say, you gotta don't worry. Be happy. Because there's only one reason why. No, this is a good one right here.
Beautifully on things you don't like, you are actively
encouraging the production of more of that thing that you don't like.
Right.
If you like something, you need to engage with what you approve of more, because every time you engage with something you dislike, advertisements are sold, and it has been incentivized to do that bad thing. And that's a really sticky thing when we have this culture where everyone loves to show their outrage and virtue signal and show that they're on the right side and all this stuff constantly, to say, hey, step back. You're just feeding the problem.
Yeah. I think there's also a problem with a lot of what people are doing during the day is something they don't want to do. A lot of what people are doing is some job that they don't enjoy, and during that job, they have freedom to go online. And in this state of feeling like shit about whatever they're doing, they enjoy complaining about stuff. And so they'll read things and type things and get engaged in things. And there's some sort of a sport getting pissed off about stuff.
Why? Don't worry. I want you to be happy.
Spending your time doing things you actually enjoy. It seems so simple. It sounds like a simple solution. But if you could figure out a way to actively ignore things that are going to piss you off and seek out things that are going to excite you and intrigue you, you're going to be a healthier, happier person. And isn't that ultimately what everybody wants? I want to be happier. Don't you want to be happier?
Of course.
But why do we seek out shit that pisses us off?
Oh. All right, you guys. It has been an interesting evening. But I'm going to do something I enjoy and like. Go play some frisbee golf with a bunch of friends of mine. I hope you guys enjoyed that show.
No need to cry, cause everything gonna be alright, man. It's gonna be alright, you know. No, it's just ill, yo. Last night, you know, all I seen was bullets and feet running and backs, you know. And when the smoke cleared, there was a little joker on the ground, man. No, had to be no younger than 13, 14 years old. Blood pouring from his head, his mother on the knees crying, you know, crying her head off. The more headline is gonna be the death of another nigga, you know what I'm saying? The death of another nigga, you know. That's how it always is. We crying for an afterlife while they just steal this.
A dedication to all the refugees worldwide. One time.
Say, say, say. I remember when we used to sit in a government yard in Brooklyn.
Stretched down.
About solving the crookedness. As it mingled with the good people we meet. Good friends we had, good friends we've lost
along the way.
In this great future, you can't forget your past. So dry your tears, I say, until my peeps who passed away. No woman, no cry.
What's up, Jay Stone?
Hey, little sister, don't shed no tear. No woman, no cry. Say, say, say. I remember when we used to rock.
Max Stone.
In a project yard
in San Fran.
With
Brad Olson. We were throwing the Howard Street Fair. And all the good people we meet at the fair, it was epic. Oh, ah. I want to get so high that I can't remember this podcast. I love you guys all, and I want you to have a beautiful evening. Light a fire. Snuggle up to your girl. Grab a glass of Cabernet with a nice fat piece of steak. Enjoy the evening, people. Yeah.